Welcome to the Inside Electronics Podcast, an Endeavor Business Media production. This podcast brings you the latest in technology, trends, and issues for the embedded electronics engineering community with your host, Alex Paul. Today in Inside Electronics, we're going to be talking to Gregory Green. He's the Director of Automotive Marketing over at Vicor. Well, hi, Greg. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Good afternoon. Good to see you, Al.
Automotive is a very hot topic right now, and that's why I'm glad we have a chance to chat, because I mean, power, well, frankly, the automotive system is at the center of every developing technology, be it wide band gap, artificial intelligence, advanced wireless functionality, right?
Yes it is. It's a whole new world inside of automotive right now, and people are relearning how to actually build a car, because a lot of the assumed systems don't make as much sense in today's electrified environment.
Well, and not only that, we've got convergence and integration to deal with. We've got, yes, there's challenges in how we're making a car, but there's also challenges in what we're putting in it.
Yeah, in fact, you know, people refer to the fact that a car is more of a data center on wheels, which is becoming exceedingly true as you go to autonomous operation or higher levels of driver assistance. And, you know, one of the things we do learn is that the computer is no match for the human brain, at least not yet, in terms of managing all the sensors and knowing what's going on. So this drives huge loads of power for the sensors and for the computing systems that take all this and try and figure out, what is that car in front of you doing and what do you need to do next?
But that's both a signals and a power issue, right? Because I've got all of these sensors, I've got to integrate the information, I've got logic, I've got to integrate that. And I'm trying to do it while I'm pushing to higher voltages and trying to reduce my wire harness and a million other differentiated goals that some are contributing and some are actually kind of contra.
Yeah, it's true. There's a lot of things going that appear to work against each other. One of the things that, you know, the power engineers are starting to really take to heart is the fact that in non-ICE vehicles, the power doesn't come from an alternator making 12 volts, which can arguably be said was almost an infinite source of power. Now we have a high voltage battery. It's 800 volts or 400 volts, or maybe in the future 1,000 volts. But, you know, that's to be debated yet. But that's a finite amount of electrons. And every electron you use to power a sensor or make a decision is an electron that won't get the customer closer to their destination.
Excellent point. So what would you say are some of the primary challenges to an automotive designer today?
So today, the primary challenges come around trying to make an efficient a car as possible, because you have a finite power source. Consumers view charging as an impediment. They're used to going to a gas station and adding 500 miles of range in 5 minutes. Now, even though it can be very convenient to charge your car overnight, they all have the fear in the back of their head of, well, if I'm traveling and I have to charge, then what? And then built onto that is the fact that as technology advances and cars were originally built with 400-volt battery systems, which were state-of-the-art 3 years ago, now 800 volts is state-of-the-art. But there's a lot of work that's gone into the 800-volt compressors and the 800-volt motors. And if you're in automotive, you understand how much work there goes into just to take 800-volt compressor and certify it and validate it for use. So if you can find a way to convert the 800 back down to 400 conveniently, efficiently, and in a small space, that really helps in a number of ways inside of the vehicle thing. And the other challenge they have is that the 12-volt world is ending. It's been a long time coming. Back in 2006 or 7, when I was at Visteon, 48-volt was coming. It was the next thing. Now it is here.
Finally.
Finally. Because as you look at the new world, and the new world is electrons are coming from very high voltage batteries, you need to step it down to safe electrical low voltage. And that first rational step is 48 volts. Now, the challenge for the customers is they have hundreds of loads that have been designed and optimized at 12 volts. They're cheap. They're reliable. There's resistance to make that change because of that. But they understand that the 48-volt main wire harnesses and buses are 85% lighter, and they're at least half the price because they have so much less copper. And one thing you know in automotive is that cost drives a lot of decisions. So one of the things that they're looking for is, how do I get a primarily 48-volt system but how can I jump that 48 down to 12 so I can keep the lamps until it makes sense to come up with new 48 volt lamps or new 48 volt window motors or new 48 volt seat motors? You can do it, but there's only so many hours in the day and so many engineers in the company to carry on all this work.
That is, Greg, that is such an awesome insight, because sometimes you get a little too close to it to notice, because I've been in cars since childhood. My father owned a garage and gas station in Brooklyn. I'm a mechanic myself. Until you mentioned that legacy adoption aspect, I didn't recognize how much of a significant challenge that is for the auto developer, because you've got legacy systems that are running at different voltages that you're trying to drive the system to.
Yes, you've got these 12-volt. You know, one of the challenges in cars is a car needs to last 15 to 20 years and 150,000 miles to 200,000 miles. That's the expectation. It's not a laptop where every 3 to 5 years you just get a new one. And so you have 12-volt devices that are proven, and we know that they last, and we know how well they work. And so if you can use those for amount of time while you make the transition from to a fully 48-volt system, that is very helpful to the company at large. Because every time you change a system, you have to go through the approval and the certification processes. As I said, there's only so many engineers and so many hours. And you'd rather focus your engineering resources on the things that have to change now, because they're going to work better at 48 volts. And we need to do that first.
Agree on all points. Now, one of the things, though, Greg, I find interesting is when I think about Vicor, I normally think Mil-Aero, Hi-Rel, money is no object engineering, and automotive is none of those things, if I may say this.
Yes, there's a lot of truth to the rumor that cost is everything in automotive, but cost is balanced against function. Cost can take a number of forms. So there is a cost to weight, and each auto company would tell you that a kilogram is worth so many dollars to them. Even if you're if the current system costs $100 and you're X dollars above that, but that X dollars makes up the weight difference, you're the same cost. Volume, space is actually becoming more critical, which is counterintuitive, because we're taking an engine away and a fuel tank away. We have lots of space, but we don't, because the platforms are kind of getting smaller overall. They're larger in size, and you need space for the extra computing power for all the new systems. You need space for some of the other things you're adding in there. So space is critical. So if you can reduce something by 33% of the space it needs, or 50%, that allows them to use that space for something else. And I've actually had OEMs come up and say, we have features we would like to add to the vehicle, but we actually don't physically have the space to put the box that makes that happen. So, you know, we do see that the ability to have very small devices like we've developed for Mil-Aero and are used in high-performance computing, these have value to the OEMs, because at the end of the day, what fits is what works. Engineers will come up and say, we only have this many liters. We only have 10 liters of space in this weird shape to make this happen. And so if you've got technology like we do that takes the size of DC-DC conversion systems way down, it empowers them to make the case for paying more for some technology, because there's a value to it at the vehicle level, that if you don't use this, you don't have the space to add the extra computer that it takes to run the high-level ADAS systems, for instance.
Greg, you're an automotive professional. You came into our industry from automotive.
Yes, I did. I probably in about my 33rd year in the automotive industry, I started out manufacturing on the plant floor and process engineering, and moved up through design engineering, and then came over into the business side of the business. So that helps, because I understand, you know, what challenges are actually facing the automotive design engineer. And part of it is just doing the electrical issue that's in front of them. But then there's the whole rest of it. I will ask people sometimes to see if they really know automotive or not, a simple question of how many cars do you build in an hour? And I'll help them out by saying it takes about 15 to 17 hours to finish a car. Now, the right answer is at least 60, or don't show up for work. And the best automakers are making up to 75 vehicles in an hour.
Wow.
So, you know, an engineer's job is not only to provide DC-DC conversion and power to all these devices, but it has to be done in a manner that can be assembled to the vehicle in 45 seconds. Because a vehicle is thousands of 45-second steps is what yields a vehicle. And so that also changes how they think about things. And that's why space can be so important to them, because it's not just the space, but the orientation. Mm-hmm. Because as you're building the car, at certain points in the line, you can only drive bolts in certain directions. You can only connect wires in certain directions. One of our big challenges actually is connections, because automotive grade connectors are big. And we make small scale devices that are being used in blade computers and other high performance computing devices. And the connector that we have to use is like 10 times the size of the functional electronic device that we're building. And part of that is driven by that, you know, it has to be easy to connect quickly, and it, you know, it has to have a snap so that you know that you connected it. And for those of you in the universe that wonder why it's so hard to disconnect a wire in a car, the reason is when they connect it, they need to know that it went in, and they get that solid click, which is what makes it hard to take off.
With your experience in the automotive industry, can you think of a time that was as disruptive as now? Or is this like never been before to this level of disruption, never will again, or whatever? What are your thoughts on that aspect of disruption? Because there have been disruptive incidents in automotive history, but probably nothing to this level.
No, in my career, this is the most disruptive time we've ever had. I mean, you probably have to go almost back to the initial beginning of the auto industry to find something as disruptive. A lot of the things that happened in between 1903, when the Ford Motor Company launched, and today, were evolutionary, not revolutionary. Better versions of engines, not entirely new types of engines. You know, it was revolutionary to add power brakes, but you had brakes to start with. With the electrified vehicle, with the battery electric vehicle, it really strikes all the way back down to the base architecture of a car. So you see that everyone's starting to work off the basic skateboard platform, which might look like cars used to be built on, but it's not. That changes so much of the physics of the car. The weight is down lower, so the cars perform better. But there's a lot of things that you have to consider in an automobile that you don't necessarily consider in a satellite or in a stay-at-home power backup system. Like, you have acceleration. You have 10, 15 G events in a car. You have extremes of hot and cold. In automotive, general automotive vehicles, we can guarantee that a car will see minus 40 and 120 Fahrenheit.
Easily.
And, you know, when you think about it, there are many times where people leave the Northeast to drive down to Florida, and it is 15 degrees Fahrenheit when they leave, and it's 80 degrees or 85 degrees outside when they arrive. And that whole time, their car has made sure that their cabin has been 70 degrees the whole trip.
That's an interesting perspective.
Yes. Yeah. There's a lot of things you take for granted, and people don't understand why there are so many computing chips built into vehicles today. All these little things that have to happen. Making sure that the climate control works automatically and decides when to switch from cooling to heating and how to switch the mixers on the vents and on the of hot and cold. Detecting if someone's in the seat so the airbag knows if it should go off or not. Window switches, you know, they have to try and perceive if something's in the way of the window so they stop going up. There's all these little things that get built into making a car. There actually are about 315 to 330 U.S. federal regulations on a motor vehicle, and people just don't understand that.
So no more of those dramatic scenes like from Snatch where he traps the guy's head in the car window and drags him down. You know, the car will say, nope, can't do that.
Yes, by design, it shouldn't do that anymore. It should either stop. Well, it might stop and keep him there, but it won't suffocate him. Some may automatically go down. This is a great example of things you have to deal with in automotive. There are times when you might not want the window to keep going up, but you don't want it to come back down.
Excellent point.
Yeah. At one point, we had developed basically fingerprint recognition to start the car. And we had a question from a customer, well, what if I cut off their finger and use it? And we'd already thought about that because we actually had to detect a pulse and the fingerprint to activate the vehicle.
See, an elegant solution for an inelegant problem.
Yeah, the challenge, you know, in motor vehicles is that they're used by everyone. And they're serviced by almost everyone. So there's different challenges as opposed to, say, aircraft, where only highly trained pilots and highly trained mechanics operate and fix these vehicles. You can tell if you watch the news or if you look in YouTube that anyone can operate a motor vehicle, no matter how well they have or have not been trained.
So, Greg, before I let you go, are there any other points you wanted to bring up, or you have any last words for our audience?
Yes. So it's a very exciting time in the industry. There's a lot of technical change going on. And if you're an engineer and you want to really get in some place that is high-paced and very challenging. Look to automotive. There's a lot of stuff going on there, and it may not sound as sexy as writing new code, but the challenges are there that it will really force you to work at the pinnacle of your abilities. And it's going to be very exciting next 5 to 10 years as we go through this progression towards electrified vehicles.
I agree completely, Gregory. And that those were awesome, awesome words. Thank you so much for taking the time. I really appreciate it.
You're welcome, Al. Happy to be here.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Inside Electronics, the podcast on the embedded engineering community. Don't forget to hit that subscribe button so you don't miss out on any episodes. Check out the next episode in 2 weeks, where our host Alex Paul will bring you the latest news, trends, and personalities from the electronic design community.